where we're at now, especially 2025, products can be commoditized, features can be copied, your ads can be outbid. Brand is the only moat that you have left, you know? And so I think people are starting to realize that, especially right now.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by Audience Plus. Our mission is to shake out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals and stir up fresh conversation, all to help you connect your brand with the right audience at the right time. Let's raise a glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. Jonathan Gandolf here, co-founder and CEO of Audience Plus. I'm thrilled to be joined by a friend of Audience Plus, co-collaborators, a brand that we've spent a lot of time with and we are a big fan of. It's Drew Brucker, who's head of brand and content at Goldcast. We use Goldcast to host all of our virtual events. And again, I'm a big fan of what they're building over there. So, Drew, before I ramble too much, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and what you're up to at Goldcast in your own words?
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Honored to be here. Excited for this conversation. Yeah, I've spent the last, I would say, 11 or 12 years specifically in B2B SaaS, in the startup space, doing anything and everything as it relates to marketing, working on some scrappy teams. And so when you're in the startup world, like you feel like all your experiences have almost compounded in terms of like how long you've been in the space compared to what you actually take away from it and how long it feels like actually even to that point. But I've been mostly working in a variety of different niches, different spaces within that, anything from a horizontal platform to vertical platforms. And then I would say as of late, the real interesting thing that took a turn for me was probably about 2 years ago around this time. You know, I was really diving heavy into AI. And so I took that opportunity to really figure out as a marketer, how am I going to integrate that into our team, our organization? And ultimately what it resulted in is me sort of like starting my own freelance agency and helping teams with their creative storytelling as it relates to AI. So really heavy on the image side and the video side of what AI was capable of. And then what you just mentioned with Goldcast, I recently joined Goldcast at the beginning of the year. And what drew me there was really the brand focus and the roadmap of what's taking place. So Goldcast, historically, right, like an event platform, which really focused on user experience, but is now shifted to a B2B video content platform, right? Giving teams the ability to incorporate a video first content strategy, making it easy and having AI power some of the more laborious or monotonous tasks that lie within that to help you scale that content forward. Yeah, man, that's sort of like the quick rundown.
I love that. I'm really excited to dig into video first content. Also the AI experience, but kind of the creative lens on that, that'll make for some good conversation later. But first, this is the Content Cocktail Hour, Drew. So we always ask all of our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
The problem with that question is the list of things that I don't drink is much, much shorter. I'm a beer guy, probably first and foremost, but if I had to go in the spirit side, usually a bourbon and tequila guy. And you know what? Cocktail, like hot take, I just give me it neat. Sometimes yeah. I'll do it on the rocks. It just depends. Like I'm easy to please.
Yeah, I'm equal opportunity to myself as well. I prefer my bourbon with a couple of ice cubes, nothing crazy. Actually, I read the book about Pappy Van Winkle, the kind of famous bourbon.
There's a book on that?
Yeah, and Wright Thompson, who's a like sports writer that's gone into other spaces as well. It's really good, but one of the things you learn during that is that a lot of people will shame others for drinking bourbon with Coke or whatever it may be, or on the rocks or whatever. Pappy or Julian Van Winkle, who's now the kind of the patriarch of the family and runs the show, he drinks Pappy, this bourbon that's supposed to be so real well-respected and you're not supposed to mess with it all, with ice and a lemon twist is how he enjoys it, which just like goes counter to what everyone else thinks.
Interesting. What's the deal with the lemon twist? Like, is that just like for garnish or is he actually like zesting it in there? I'm curious about that. I don't do it, but I'm wondering.
Yeah, I'm curious as well. I'm not sure, but we should find out. We should find him and see if he'll enjoy a bourbon with us.
Okay, so before we pivot away from this topic, what's your, you got a go-to brand of bourbon or?
So I'm a bit of a snob or a connoisseur. I'm not sure, choose your word. So I lived in Kentucky for 5 years and I was actually in the alcohol industry down there and got pretty into the bourbon scene. So my favorite kind of hidden gem is a bourbon called Henry McKenna, a single barrel. It's 10-year age bourbon. Bottled and Bond. Used to be able to find it everywhere, then it got very popular, couldn't find it anywhere. I'm a big fan of Buffalo Trace Distillery, basically anything they do, as well as Heaven Hill. Those are kind of my two, like, broader.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I haven't heard of the other two outside of Buffalo Trace.
McKenna, well, since maybe, you asked me, but I got to return the question.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, I'm almost one of those where I want to try something new every time. But if I had to go back to something, like, man, Old Forester's pretty good. I mean, like, High West is hit or miss, but when it's hit, I really like it. Eagle Rare, I do like Weller, I do like Jefferson's. Like, there's some good brands in there. I'm drawing a blank, but
I like the variety. It's really good. Well, maybe we'll go even deeper on a follow-up episode, and we can actually enjoy some during the episode. Cool. So let's talk video first content. I'll share a little bit of my own kind of experience with video here. I used to lead a marketing team at another SaaS business, and we didn't do video. This was 2018, 2019. I hated the idea of myself being on video, which is incredibly ironic here now as I'm recording a video podcast.
But this is pre-COVID though.
Right. And I didn't like the idea of even like posting the kind of, at that point in time, I don't know if we all remember the like walking selfie video on LinkedIn that was super popular. But then I was able to kind of hide behind the, well, video is really expensive to do well. It's hard to produce. It's hard to edit. And now I've come full circle in post-COVID and leading Audience Plus, a content business. Now I say marketers have no excuse to not do video. There are too many tools, too many platforms like Goldcast that make it so easy to do. We've used the Content Lab, you all have. And in a world of AI where it's really easy to replicate written content, I think video provides this human outlet, right? So it makes me uncomfortable to think that there are marketers out there not using video or not even being video first in their content. So maybe talk about the evolution that Goldcast has gone through. I know you all started during COVID as an event, virtual event business, which is video, you know, depending on how you want to define it, and the long tail of that leading into being a video first content platform.
Yeah, got me. You brought up some really good points and discussion points within what you just mentioned. I think like a lot of people remember, you know, a lot of us marketers that have been around for a little while, right? You had the excuse because there was that large barrier to entry. It was expensive. Video was expensive. Video took a lot of time to do. You probably had to have an expert that had really done that quite a bit in the past, most of which never sat internally on those teams. Technology wasn't what it is today, right? So you also were handcuffed to whatever existed in the software space for video. And a lot of those tools just weren't there yet. So you did have those excuses. I had those excuses too. Like, I mean, I think in the back of our heads, we all knew video was the opportunity, but it just kind of felt so daunting and kind of scary in that sense to really like go all in on it. But to your point, like bringing this back full circle, I think video, just like creativity with some of the AI tools now, like has become a lot more democratized, right? Like anybody can do this stuff now. And you've got, of course, all the social media platforms that will indicate that to you, right? Like LinkedIn and TikTok and, you know, Gen Z and my four-year-old kids are like picking up a phone and can record a video, right? And
it's like instinctual to them. It's crazy.
It's right, man. It's like innate, like they're born with this gene. But yeah, like it makes us millennials kind of look a little bit like we've got to pivot. And I think the point is, right, like video, while it's not new, I think the idea of it being a video first content strategy is new, right? Like in terms of executing on that. And so Goldcast specifically, I think, has played like a really interesting role in this path. They got involved with events virtually when COVID happened, right? Which obviously we all felt that pain. Most of us were not on video a lot. Most of us didn't have, you know, we weren't doing podcasts. We didn't have mics, right? Like we were so uncomfortable because it was such a new thing for us. And what that period of time did was really like expose that everybody had to adapt. And Goldcast really kind of went from that to expanding it in terms of we are servicing marketers at the end of the day. Marketers are trying to essentially use content as the core marketing function that exists, right? To drive business, to drive retention, to drive storytelling. And so events are just one spoke of that, you know? And I think what they envisioned was like, look, let's cater to all of that. Let's make this as, you know, attainable and accessible as possible to start like moving faster, moving more agilely, but also at the same time, not necessarily needing more headcount, right? Not necessarily needing a bigger budget. And so I think that's sort of the important part there. And then one of the stats, like with video specifically, that's interesting too, is, you know, 80% prefer video to text, right? So 4 out of every 5. Text is great. People skim, though. It's kind of exhausting depending on how much is there, how it's formatted, right? Video is really your chance to deliver a message in a very like authentic, relatable, and I think memorable way.
Yeah, I think retention is, I've seen statistics around retention of video because you're literally seeing somebody else, or there's just a different kind of psychology element to it that retention is better from video versus written content.
And that was the other point that I like to bring up too, in something that, like, you know, I was kind of doing like selfishly too for a little bit there, where I was reading a lot of marketing material, new ideas, novel concepts even, where it's, okay, how do I retain this, right? Like, I'm writing about it, but obviously, like, if you teach it or you talk about it, then you retain even more of it, right? And so it was almost like, okay, well, I'm going to use video to do that, you know, now that I've written this out. And by me kind of like regurgitating this and putting my own spin on it, I'm going to retain more of that information. So yeah, I think that's a really good point, right? Like, there are just layers of ways to retain information, and video just strikes a much higher percentage than something like text.
Yeah, that's awesome. The best way to learn is to teach, right? And video provides that opportunity. So, all right, you and I both have kind of shared our own journey with video. What about marketers who might be listening to this and maybe their brand hasn't jumped on the video bandwagon, or they're trying to convince their leadership to think video first? What would you kind of guide them to get them started thinking about and acting on video first content?
Yeah, like, so going back to that statistic of how people like to consume information or consume content in general, this isn't to say like you only do video, but at the same time, I feel like you have to have some layer, some foundation of video into your strategy, if nothing else. I think first you got to identify like what you're trying to achieve with your messaging. What's your clear point of view? And then how are you going to come up with a content strategy that makes sense for your organization and the resources that you have available? Part of that is recognizing and identifying like the right tools for you. Like, what are you trying to do? Do you host a lot of live events or virtual events or things like that? There's a whole strategy, right, in play around using long form content like that and breaking it down and repurposing and using in different ways. So I think what you're trying to do is first take inventory of what you're currently doing, poke some holes in it, think about the long-term versus the short-term of content, right? Like, content is a long game at the end of the day. And one of the terms that I think that we're trying to really push forward is like this idea of mind share, and how you build mind share really comes down to leaving a lasting impact, doing something memorable, creating conversations and talking points that aren't going to disappear out of somebody's mind the minute you're done talking to them. And so video is one of those tools and one of those vehicles that can help get you there.
I love that idea of mind share. It almost makes me like harken back to the idea, like, I'm envisioning like Don Draper staring out a window, like smoking a cigarette, right?
Yeah.
It's like brand, right?
And I think exactly.
In the B2B SaaS space, we've, to a fault, and I say we, I'm part of being guilty of this, like, we've operationalized all things like demand gen, go-to-market performance marketing, like, we know the ROAS, the cost per lead, the cost per click, the cost per, like.
Yeah, everything's about ROI.
Yeah, we've turned everything into algebra, but this mind share, it feels like a return to what marketing maybe at its core should be about. Was there kind of like a light bulb moment for Goldcast or for you that's like, yes, that's like what we need to do kind of in this market where there's so much other noise being generated?
That's a great question, but I'll give you my personal experience. Like, when Goldcast and I started talking about this opportunity and the role here, that was a term that we both used. And it was just like this light bulb moment for me, because it was like, oh, Goldcast views this way. This is exactly how I'm thinking about it. And I think you and I know, just again, referencing what you just said, which is so, so true, there's only a minority of folks that are actually thinking about it that way, because it's been this growth at all costs mindset. It's also been, how can we track every single thing? And like, not everything's about ROI directly, right? It can be, what is your objectives for this? I like to say ROO, return on objectives. What's the objective? What's the return on that objective that you got? Not everything has to tie directly to a financial bottom line, right? Because when you start thinking about it that way, it ultimately deters your course and sets you in a direction where you're not doing things in a very like creative or unselfish or customer first fashion. But if you're able to just kind of spin it in terms of like, look, this is all about relationships. This is all about distributing our point of view and making something that's going to stick. Then that changes your perception and it changes your strategy totally. It's just like we've been a product of that for so long. And I think you've probably felt the same way, but it's never quite felt right for marketing to feel so black and white, transactional, like simply being about revenue. Because look, I think where we're at now, especially 2025, products can be commoditized, features can be copied, your ads can be outbid. Brand is the only moat that you have left, you know? And so I think people are starting to realize that, especially right now.
Okay, so a bit of a paradox here that I'm going to ask the follow-up question to that. So I agree with everything you said. Does this emphasis on mindshare marketing, ironically, does it change how you measure like success for marketing, or is it even measured? Like, how do you know, like, okay, we do have mindshare, we don't have mindshare, or do you even try to do that?
Yeah, great question. I mean, you should try to do that, right? This is not just like, it feels like we're making a difference. Like at the end of the day, you should have some leading, lagging indicators that are going to go to support your sentiment on that. But the great part about that, right, is it's not necessarily just tied to ROI. And let's be honest too, like attribution's been a problem for a long time. If we're going to try to justify everything with ROI, attribution really needs to be fixed first. And so from that standpoint, yeah, there are like certain things that you could look at. Like maybe you have a term that you're coining as a brand. Maybe you have, you know, a way to track those things. Same with your approach with how that appears in conversations, share of voice, like more of the brand specific metrics and KPIs versus just all those things, all those great acronyms that you spit out earlier, right? Like there definitely are a handful of those that can really kind of like support whether you're heading in the right direction or not. And so I think we're, to be perfectly candid, still trying to figure that out ourselves. Sure. Because this is a pivot, you know, like in terms of, yeah, what is the right way to do this, right? Like what are the things that actually matter most?
I like and respect the pivot. As we're recording this, you guys are doing events in market around Mindshare, even titled Mindshare. So you're going all in on it. And I love that. I'm going to shift topics just a little bit. We should get some sort of award. We're 20 minutes into a marketing podcast and we haven't explicitly talked about AI yet. So we're due. But earlier, you mentioned, and I don't know where this answer will go, but when you were talking about your experience with AI, you used words like more focus on the creative and the storytelling around AI. I feel like so much of the AI conversation has been revolved around efficiency and like cost savings and like operational. So maybe just tell me a little bit more about that AI experience, maybe your unique lens or approach with it that leaned more on the like storytelling and creative side.
Yeah. So like my quick story was I was leading a marketing team over at Lasso from 2021 to 2023. And when we all got access to public access to something like ChatGPT, for example, that was like, I don't know, November, December, 2022. About that same time, like I'm also a photographer, I got into Midjourney. And so Midjourney was, it's an AI image generation tool still around today, probably the best one still. But like that was also really sparking my interest just from like a creative standpoint, not even for work. But what I saw was that like the quality jump gets so good. It made me start to wonder like how we could use that internally at my company. And it was just like, oh, okay, I see it now. All these brands, including us, have this problem with resonant custom on-brand imagery, right? We go to stock photography, or maybe we hire a professional photographer, or we're just like, they're photos from like events that we have in person, but those didn't happen for a lot of teams. Those don't happen often enough, right? So there are a lot of challenges that exist within that stock photography, like especially if you're in a niche industry, you probably can't find what you're looking for. Or if you're B2B SaaS, we've all seen like the same images as same faces. And so it just got me thinking, I was like, I wonder if I could create images that felt like us, infusing our brand colors and thinking about who our demographic is, how old they are, their gender, their ethnicity, what they wear, what locations they're in, right? Like all those things, the vibe, the cultural aspect of who we are as a company, and infuse that into imagery. Just like from a creative standpoint, I just started like mapping out what would those shots be? And I started just like playing around with prompts and ultimately got to a point where I could templatize some of these prompts where it was like, oh, okay, I just swap in man or woman. I'm going to swap in the ethnicity. I'm going to swap in the age. I'm going to swap in the location. I'm going to swap in this, that, or the other. But the brand colors are always there, right? Like it's got that vibe that this feels like us and no one else has that imagery. We actually had a customer event where that came full circle, where it was like, okay, we're creating this landing page. We're creating a theme for the event. We're creating like slides and some other things that we're going to present in person at this event. And all the imagery for that, including like the swag, was generated using Midjourney. And so to see that come to life organically, it just kind of like set me off down this path. It's just like, dude, there's something here. That's kind of what drove that interest to really kind of like explain that to other teams. No one else saw that at the time. And the tech specifically around AI image at that time was more inconsistent than it is now. So you really had to know what you were doing to accomplish it. But that was where it all got started for me. Like just thinking about the creative storytelling aspect. We've seen video, for example, it's gotten a lot better than in the last 6 to 12 months. But to be able to democratize like creative storytelling using video and image gen, that's going to be something that you don't have to have creative compromises. You don't have to spend a lot of money. You don't have to take a lot of time to do that. Like that's where I think the future of this stuff is going. So being educated and making sure you're experimenting with different tools is and has been important since AI dropped. So just a reminder, like it's hard to keep track of everything, but continue to challenge yourself to learn new tools and experiment and play around.
Yeah, absolutely. And now bringing that full circle or to present day here, Goldcast has Content Labs, which takes video, it takes recorded events, and basically instantly creates, I call them atomized, but atomized assets.
I like atomized. That's cool. Yeah.
I remember the first time I used that, I was like, we recorded an event with a few folks and it was brand new. And I was just like, oh, I'll go play around with it. And I was like, wait a second. I don't even have to play around with it. It's done. Everything was just there. It was one of those AI experiences that you have and you're like, oh, this is real. This is powerful. And thank you. So then I download those assets. I sit up to our speakers like, I don't know, like 30 minutes after the event was done. And the only reason for the delay was my own, like probably distraction or something. But two of them respond. They're like, holy crap, this is the fastest we've ever gotten anything post-event. Like, quality was there. Branding was there. And then we had somebody else execute an event for us. And I kind of told them going into it, I was like, you'll be shocked at how good like the assets are post-event. And they were like blown away with that experience. It was a real like aha moment for tech. So I have to imagine it's pretty cool for you to be providing that and seeing other marketers now have that aha moment that maybe you had earlier in the adoption lifecycle of AI.
100%. And like we also, as a company, we have to do it really well to then be able to expect and want others to do it well. So we're also shifting our strategy to adapt to that, right? Like we've got, to your point, Content Lab or that technology in itself, right? Where you can take a long form piece of content, get a transcript, you can create social clips. And in, there are two different ways to do that, right? Like one where the AI recognizes certain moments, right? Where I think depending, like I've played with so many tools, it's kind of hit or miss. Content Lab does a pretty good job of picking the right ones. But the one thing I didn't realize too, though, is you can actually go in the transcript. And if you know a certain spot that you want a clip, you just highlight it and click create a clip. And so it'll take that, like you're not just at the mercy of what AI will take out of it or completely manual. There's that part of it, which I love because it can really be more refined in what you're trying to pull out. But yeah, you're right. Like why not start with a long form piece of content and break it down and go from there, right? Because then you can get a blog, email copy, right? Takeaways, social clips, list goes on and on and on. Is it going to be click and done and you're going to take this stuff and go? Probably not. I don't know that it ever should get there, right? Because it's not going to have all the context that you have as a creative person or a storyteller or whoever's in charge of your content. And that's cool, right? But I do want to get from that zero to one. And this does that, right? It reminds me of when I first started in content, the only way to really like break down long form content was like schedule a half hour, an hour meeting with like an SME, record it using something like Memo or voice notes or Evernote. And then I had to go to like Rev or Rev.com to transcribe it. You know what I mean? Like, yep. So this is just, it's a workflow change. And I think it's exciting because like as marketers, we all have enough shit to do already. So yeah,
All right, well, cool. Drew, we always ask all of our guests, what's an unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to B2B marketing?
Yeah, unpopular opinion. Oh, I don't want to use the one I had earlier about ROI because that would feel like cheating. But let me tie this back into Mindshare again for a second. I think anybody's competition, it's probably less about the competition than it is their indifference for the product or the solution to begin with. So like keeping an eye on your competitor, knowing what's happening, things like that are great. Obviously, there are plenty of other conversations you could get in where it's like, okay, like know what's going on, leave the competitor alone. You don't need to follow because you're going to be in a follow mindset. That said, like the real problem there, I think, is the indifference, the uneducation, the lack of strength, the lack of memorability that exists in your POV and why your product or your solution is ultimately inevitable for your ICP. And you got to paint that story to them. You got to meet them where they are, you know, and that goes back to video, right? Like just that's the way people like to consume content. So it's like bringing this full circle. You have to cater to that and really do a good job of repeating your message and probably to the point that it becomes a little bit annoying to you. But the reality is most people don't see your message the first time, and there are 100 different ways to say the same thing. And so I think that's important too. You really want people to walk away with 1, 2, maybe 3, if you're lucky, key things about what your company is, what they do, and how they do it. You need to take control of that proactively.
I love that. Status quo is the ultimate competitor. So many deals are lost to status quo. Have seen that over and over again. And I think that's why Mindshare is so important. You and I were talking a little bit before we hit record here. The buying cycle is a lot of times people are trying to actually validate or verify the decision they've already made during a sales cycle as opposed to actually shop, which I get. Just everything goes back to this Mindshare. I think the more you can be top of mind, the more direct that process will be and the better you can overcome status quo.
I like the way that you put it, right? Like Mindshare marketing is really about things like being in someone's mind when they have the need for that solution or they're trying to solve that problem. How do you get on that short list? It's about doing things that are memorable. It's about having relationships. It could be as simple as like you're posting on LinkedIn for your company, but you've been posting on there for so long, right? Like people know who your company is through the lens of somebody else. And the reality is they'll also trust your brand through that person. They don't even have to know that person very well, but if they like their content or they've seen them enough, they're going to have a positive sentiment toward that. And to your point, if you're on the short list, it's less about hard selling and it's more about validating. And that's the secret sauce. Yeah.
Love that so much. So good. Well, Drew, if people want to learn more from you or learn more about Goldcast, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, goldcast.io. Check us out. Content Lab, by the way, which we've mentioned on this particular segment, is free. So like check that out. If you're curious about breaking down long form content, all you need is like an existing video file or YouTube link for that matter. Drop it in there, play with it. But it's definitely a go if you're a content marketer, if you're a marketer in general that's trying to like scale your content. And then I'm on LinkedIn. So just follow me, Drew Brucker, on LinkedIn, and feel free to shoot me a question if you want to connect further.
Love that. We'll get all the links, including Content Lab, in the show notes here. I would legitimately encourage and champion any marketer to go check it out. Drew, thank you so much for joining today's episode. To all of our watchers and listeners, until next time, same place. Cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by Audience Plus. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us at audienceplus.com. See you next time, same place. Cheers.